Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Way into this era of plentiful, diverse television, what motivates someone to dive into the arena of content creation? Well, you'll hear one person's motivation and results so far when Bob Sullivan, the founder and chief executive of new entity Bandit Productions, joins me next. Nature, the long-running public television series on PBS, launched its 40th season Wednesday. We'll catch up with executive producer Fred Kaufman next half hour. Also ahead, is a TV strike on for Monday? I Love Lucy hit 70, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. I present the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Great to have you with us on this Ides of October 2021. 78 degrees top of the hour here in New York, and this is the program all about TV's current and future, now in year 15. Great to have you with us. Two wonderful guests over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Give us a call. Here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is in any way you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, no problem with us because we got a chat room in business. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can catch it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you're interacting with us. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Bob Sullivan from Bandit Productions will be live with us shortly. Bob, if you can hear me, we're having a problem connecting you, so give us a call back at 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you're back on the line with us, we will connect you. In the meantime, coming your way right now is News Notes. A shutdown of television production across the nation may kick off Monday morning if the International Alliance of Television or Theatrical Stage Employees, IASTE for short, have their current agreement with TV producers expire. Talks over a new deal continue at this hour. The key issues here include wages, on-job conditions, and a cut of revenue from mega content services from Paramount Plus to Netflix. Up to 60,000 employees from camera operators to lighting crews could go on strike Monday. Original series on HBO, BET, Showtime, and other cable networks will continue in production under a separate deal if the strike happens. If any developments break over the weekend, we'll let you know in our Twitter feed. This Ides of October is a big one for a TV comedy classic. 70 years ago today, I Love Lucy premiered on CBS, starring Lucille Ball as Lucy Ricardo and then-husband Desi Arnaz as bandleader Ricky Ricardo. The program ran weekly from 1951 to 1957, then became the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, 13 specials running during 1957 and 1960, the last two seasons as part of Westinghouse Desi Lou Playhouse. Desi Lou, of course, the production company named after Desi Arnaz and Lucy. Now some quickies. Netflix brings on season 5 of Adult Toon Big Mouth November 5th. Harvey Keitel has joined the cast of Iron Mike, that's Hulu's miniseries about boxing champion Mike Tyson. Popular author David Baldacci is developing Grey, an espionage saga for Lionsgate and AGC Television. 6 Feet Under and House of Cards co-star and Emmy nominee Patricia Clarkson will play the title role. And another ABC sing-along special will warble to viewers November 4th, spotlighting the music of Queen. Performers include Fall Out Boy, Alyssa Cara, and Adam Lambert. And that is News Notes for today. And now joining us live is the founder and chief executive of Bandit Productions, Bob Sullivan. Bob, good to have you with us.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Very, very welcome, and much appreciated on our end, too. Bob, why did you decide to switch careers in TV from what you were doing before to forming your own shop?
So I spent the vast majority of my career working in local news, running local news operations, TV stations, et cetera. Got out, came back in, and was creating TV shows for broadcast groups, like Scripps, big groups, Scripps, Tegna. And I just decided, you know, I'm creating these shows. They're successful. 5 of them are still on the air today. But in essence, they get all the spoils, right, to the creation of these shows. Why not venture out, try it on my own? And so that was the beginnings of launching Bandit Productions.
Should point out that among those five that you developed, some of them we covered when they started, such as Right This Minute, which you said is still running, weekdays in syndication, well, also The List, which is running on not only on Scripps television stations, but also in other markets too, including WPX here in New York. Last I heard, it's on the weekends, I believe. What kind of programming does Bandit want to do?
Staying in that genre that I've been successful in the past, unscripted, reality. We are also working on a couple of documentaries, whether they're going to manifest themselves as docu-follow series, you know, limited series like four or five parts, six parts, or single you know, play documentaries. We've got a unit that's working on a couple of concepts in there. But for the most part, unscripted reality in the field is what I've been known for and what I'm going to kind of stay in my sweet spot.
We'll talk about the shows that you're working on right now in a little bit. But first, what's it been like for you to form your own company? What's been sort of the challenges in spite of the career you've had, and a very successful one, working for Scripps, for broadcast station owners like Scripps and Tegna, to put this independent company on the air?
So, you know, who knows what the future has in store for you when you make a decision like this. My brother and I, Tim, we launched we launched an investment group in February of 20 to get this thing going. And you know the rest of the story, what happened in February of 20. COVID hits. But so you have to meet life's challenges head on. You have to, you know, always where there's adversity, there's opportunity. What didn't slow down, obviously, during that window of time, and we're still in it, obviously, but hopefully coming out of it, is the demand for original content. And the interest of the streamers, especially coming into play, to say they need more content, as well as the cable trying to stay up, and then original unscripted for even syndicated platforms like broadcast TV is still there as well. So the biggest challenge, obviously, was the timing was not fortuitous for us at the beginning with COVID, but we're coming out of it fine.
We are talking with Bob Sullivan. He is the founder and chief executive of new production venture Bandit Productions, which is based in both Phoenix and Los Angeles. And he joins us live from the West Coast this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Tom, I'm with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard, wherever you may be. If you have a question or a comment for our first guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Something else that happened earlier today, Netflix premiered its third season of the popular stalker drama You, a show that originally starred on Lifetime, and then because Netflix got the rerun rights, they were able to turn it and make it their own show, and it's already been renewed for a fourth season. Monday on Tomorrow I'll be televised, my lead guest will be the co-creator, the executive producer, and the showrunner of that series, Sarah Gamble. So you'll hear her first next Monday. And then we'll meet another entrepreneur. He's an actor, producer, writer, director, and not only wants to do not one, but two, but three new television series. And he's got one that he's going to be premiering, at least on the web, next month called Bloodbath. His name is Brian James. I think you'll enjoy hearing from him. That's Sarah Gamble from You on Netflix. And then Brian James. It's all coming your way on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow will be televised. So what's first up from Bandit, Bob?
So we have a slate of unscripted shows. We're out on the marketplace right now with one of them. The working title is called What I Saw from Space. We have co-produced the project with two EPs that come from unique backgrounds. One is a former astronaut. I guess once an astronaut, always an astronaut. She's been on a couple of shuttle flights as well as done, you know, spacewalks. And then the other co-EP on that project was Buzz Aldrin's personal assistant for years, for almost 20 years. And then obviously has moved that into helping other astronauts and their speaking engagements and things like that. But the opportunity is really, or the opportunity availed itself from the two of them, where it's when you go into space, people go into space, astronauts do, to explore space. But in essence, what ends up happening is they also find out they really have a greater and more deeper connection to the Earth that we live on. And so it's the concept is the first thing astronauts do when they go into space, they first look, where's my house? And then after that, they pick out a landmark that somehow attracts them to you know, the Earth we live on. And when they get back on Earth, they want to go explore that part of the Earth they've never seen before. It's a phenomena that happens almost to every single astronaut that goes up into space. Haven't talked to William Shatner yet to see if that happened to him, but that's the concept for the series, and right now we're out pitching that one.
Would you like to get him, given the fact that he had an amazing time at the age of 90, grew up in space a couple of days ago?
It was, you know, it was interesting. My head of development wrote me an email the other day and she said, I'm already reaching out to him to see if we can, you know, have a play with him somehow in this project. But we've gotten good response. Obviously, space is of high level of interest these days, whether it's because of SpaceX, NASA, or Richard Branson. But we think we have a uniquely positioned concept with the two EPs that are behind it. And then the other project we're in development on, we're getting ready to go to the marketplace on, is the Follow docuseries with IndyCar driver Elio Castroneves, who less than a couple months ago won the Indy 500 for the fourth time. And if he does it the fifth time, it's the greatest achievement in all of motorsports. So we've gotten permission from him, from IndyCar, from his team to, in essence, follow him as he races for five. The obvious level of interest in F1 racing with the F1 series on Netflix, we think creates a marketplace for this kind of a docu-follow series.
And Helio is a very popular personality beyond the race car circuit with IndyCar because of his contestant work on Dancing with the Stars.
Correct. Which he won, by the way. He always points that out to me, which I won, by the way.
One of the very best, by the way, of the sports-oriented contestants who came on that program and knocked out the judges and won that Mirrorball trophy.
You know, the other projects, I'm under NDA on a couple of them, but there's a music documentary series we're working on. There's a game show that I'm working on with a major studio. We've got several unscripted projects in the spaces of either politics coming into the political year coming up in 22. We have one in the e-commerce space, so to speak, where, you know, it's a version of Shark Tank that I think has a unique twist to it. And then another one is just in terms of self-help, self-awareness. We have a unique twist on that as well with somebody that comes in more from the space of after divorce, the picking up the pieces. He's a uniquely knowledgeable person that has been on numerous talk shows over the years and is trying to get his own show launched. So we're trying to work on something with him as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the slate is diverse.
When you go after these projects, two questions. First of all, how do you select the projects that you want to do? And then I'll ask the second one.
You know, the first, let me back up and start by saying, and you know this because you've been doing this show for a while and you've talked to a lot of people in this space. If any of us knew what the heck people would want, I wouldn't be doing this job, right? I'd be doing some major consultant job. So you have to go with a couple of things. You have to go with what is the marketplace asking for? What are the mandates currently from the major studios and the major networks? Try to, you know, in essence, give them what they say they want. The problem with that is those mandates change daily. You try to read the tea leaves a little bit in terms of what's working right now, what kind of genres are working, what are people interested in right now, try to find a derivative of that. And then if all of those, take those things out and put them off to the side, you really, for me, it's, you know, on my tombstone, it's going to say, it's the story, stupid. It's great storytelling. And that can come from anything. It can come from anybody, anywhere, on any topic. But if they have a unique point of difference, a unique story to tell, people gravitate towards that. It doesn't matter if it's a book, a movie, a TV show, or anything else, a news story. If there has a unique point of difference, something that you haven't seen or heard before, then I gravitate to those stories as well and those genres.
When you deal with a athlete or a personality, someone notable like a Helio or like the astronaut that you're going to be doing the other show with, how do you encourage them to go with you and the concept you're pitching as opposed to going with somebody else? Because you're in competition, I would think, with a lot of other people who would like to use the services of that notable.
Question. you know, it boils down to two things. Well, three things. Who are you? You know, what exactly is your point of difference as a production company? And then most importantly, what have you done? And so, you know, I can point to the third one, as you've already pointed out to your listeners. I've got a track record of getting shows onto television that sustain. Right this minute's in its 12th season. The List is in its 10th season. A show called Daily Blast Live is in its third season. So I have a track record of finding and nurturing projects along the way that are sustainable. And then it really boils down to trust. You know, do I look at them? Do they look at me? And do we look each other in the eye and go, I know you have my best interest at heart. I know you're going to take my passion project and you're going to really do everything you can to get it to the marketplace. And for me, it's I'm going to look them in the eye and go, do you really have a passion in this project or do you just want to be a TV star? Because if it's the latter, I'm not interested. But if you're really there as a passion project for you to get that story told on a consistent basis and a high-quality basis, then let's look at each other in the eye. If it matches up, let's shake hands. It's really that simple. You know, your reputation, it doesn't matter if it's in podcasting like you do or on television, your reputation is everything. And it only takes one bad project or one bad turn of the dice for your reputation to take a hit. And if it does, then you know, probably should fold up the tent and move on because no one's going to come over the doorstep and trust you again. And that's, you know, that has served me well over the last
mind, Bob,
14 years.
With what you just said in mind, Bob, a moment ago, are there certain genres of unscripted television you will not have your company do? No way, no how.
That's another great question. I'm not going to get into quote-unquote scripted, unscripted. That's just my language for unscripted that's really not. You know, I'm not going to get in there and manufacture, get into a series and go, well, they really want this, so what I really need you to say in this next segment is this. I'm not going to go there. First of all, it's not my DNA of doing news for over 40 years. You know, I come, I see, I report the facts. If I'm going to get into an unscripted environment, whether it's Elio or anyone else, I'm going to shoot what I see. I'm going to, in essence, present in a program format what I've seen and what I saw. I'm not going to get into a situation where I'm going to be driven by a studio or by my, even God forbid, people I hire in the field to drive a narrative down a certain pathway or alleyway just because we think it's more sellable or more sexy. It's going to be what it's going to be, and if it doesn't sell, then it doesn't sell. But I'm not going to compromise those values.
Mm-hmm. With all the different ways that you can get your product out there, you've got syndication, you've got broadcasting cable networks, you now have this incredible assortment of mega content services going through smart TV sets and devices. You also have all these new multi-channel bundles and program individual services also going through smart sets and devices. And you also have some of those bundles are involving station content Sir from Sinclair, like View It TV, which runs the Netflix of live local programming. We're probably generated by local stations. Have you figured out yet which way you would lean toward for at least some of your series?
Simon, you're asking good questions. My gut says to answer that question, yes, all of them. But, you know, only because I got experience in several of those. You know, when I'm in early stage development, I try to obviously think about first and foremost, where could this sell? Who are the buyers? And so some of the projects are unique to maybe streaming, and some of them are unique maybe to syndication. The game show, if it comes to fruition, I think it's really a single play. It's syndication. If there are connective points that I have in relationships from my years of working in local with some of these broadcast groups, as you alluded to, that are going national, whether it's Scripps or Nexstar or Sinclair, and they need, you know, either it's white label content or fresh content, then I'll pivot and create shows specific to those platforms. One area that I've already started exploring, which I wasn't expecting to explore, is retail. And that's only because I have another company that I own, which does live IP, which is live transmission over the internet, where we have been approached with that company, could you in essence create a national network with my brick and mortar stores to create in essence an in-store network of fresh content where I don't have to, so I can drive traffic into my retail brick and mortar. Number two, where I can create content that heretofore I've only been able to quote sell that content through a 30-second spot. can I do branded content in these environments as well as streaming, but really in these environments where Bandit could be, in essence, not only the production partner that produces this content, but also could come up with content creation as well as get it into these stores through our other company that we own called Bitfire.
It's interesting you say that because last night USA Network launched a show called America's Big Deal, which is a Shark Tank-like series. But the big thing here is that the contestants get the opportunity to encourage viewers to buy their product. And the person who ultimately wins is the person that sells the most product, hopefully either through smartphones or through smart TV sets and devices by using their Siri or their Google Assistant or their Alexa, which now is available to be used through the television set with their voice. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, whether, in fact, that kind of network using smart TV sets and devices as a key way to go can happen. We're speaking with Bob Sullivan. He is the founder and chief executive of Bandit Productions, one of the new production companies on the TV scene, and he joins us live from the West Coast this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A, and whoever you are, 7 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Bob, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, are we now in the era of 5G TV? Well, yesterday, there was a press release announcing we might just be, thanks to a project called UMAX.TV, that's UMAX.TV. It's from a company called SuperCloud International, and we will have an exclusive interview on Tomorrow Be Televised next Friday with the person who is leading that effort. His name is Jim Devericks. I think you'll be very interested to hear what he has to say and about what 5G television could mean for the medium. Also, we will have Canela Media's Chief Executive Officer, Isabel Raffer, will be back with us. Canela Media, which does Canela TV, has a brand new service for TV sets through smart TV sets and devices called Canela Music. It was announced earlier this week. Isabel Raffer joining us live. That's all coming up for a 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Of the shows you did at Scripps and at Tegna, what are you most proud of?
God, another good question. That's like asking which of your kids do you love most. Probably Daily Blast Live at Tegna, because it was such a big swing. I took some of the learnings that I had working with Magic Dust on Right This Minute and the show I created, The List, where I was approached by the CEO of the company, Dave Lugie, who said, I want to create a show that basically can extend what a local broadcast group can do to extend what news and information could be. But it needs to be, you know, something that is unique and different. So my point of difference was, oh, it's got to be live. So, you know, how do you do that? Well, I took the CNN headline news model. I said, if it's on in New York, it's going to be live. It's going to be in Cincinnati, it's live, et cetera, Mountain Time Zone Pacific. Well, how do you do that? Well, you do 13 live half hours a day. Well, how do we do that, et cetera, et cetera. So the production model was, it's not that revolutionary to cable, but it was like headline news, but it was revolutionary to local. And that show is doing very well. I think it's at least third season, not fourth. But every time you tune into that show, it's live because that's the currency. It's topical. It's what's happening right now. What is blasting out on social media, on news, et cetera. Just give us 30 minutes. We're the utility to tell you what it is. You don't have to go scrape it on your own. So I was proud of the effort that we put into it. It hasn't morphed as much as I thought it was going to be more of a 360, meaning full-on digital, social, and broadcast as I wanted it to be. But I'm still very proud of what we did to get that concept up and running.
Mm-hmm. When you were doing your series at both Scripps and Tegna, these were shows that were self-syndicated or they were able to get a syndicator to do it across the country. Now we're seeing broadcast station groups like Scripps, and which now is a more network company, but Sinclair, Nexstar, and so forth, either own cable networks, run smart TV sets, smart TV services, and do other things too. Well, what do you think about the fact that you're now seeing local broadcast station owners become, in effect, national programmers?
I think it's smart. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you don't want to be the frog in the water. And while local is still, you know, it used to be 50 cents on the dollar, local news, you know, maybe it's 35 cents on the dollar. It's still a really good margin, a good return. But at the end of the day, to ask people to tune in anymore at a specific time, whether it's 7 or 11 o'clock at night to watch your local news, is a tall order, and the ratings are reflecting that. So to stay alive as a broadcast entity, I call it that, a local broadcast entity, you have to diversify. And diversification came in the way of .2s, .3s, .4s for programming, but the content did not really follow. Original content did not follow. Well, now it's starting to, with those groups that have a national footprint, like you said, Nexstar, Scripps, and Sinclair. So then it is, what do you do with it? Right now, what they're all three of them are doing is what they know. They know news. So they, what do? They add more news. I would argue it has to not only just be news, but you also have to get into the original program business, because at the end of the day, you can only have so much fill of news, and then you say enough. Doesn't matter, you know, if it's left-leaning, right-leaning, middle of the road, it doesn't matter. If it's one thing and one thing only, you're not really, increasing your odds of success by not having a diversified portfolio. I'm not just saying that from a self-serving standpoint because I create original content, but I used to be in those trenches. I used to run programming for those divisions, or those groups. I used to create programs for the local stations. I think they need to do the same thing on a national level by creating original programming beyond four people sitting behind a desk.
And when do you think we will see the first original series from Bandit?
Well, God willing, and a buyer bites, hopefully, no later than Q1. We're getting really good reactions so far, as I said, on the space doc or the space documentary series. We've already had buyer interest in seeing the product for the Elio project. We're not even to the market with it yet. And we're quickly following behind, as I stated to your listeners before, on four other projects. You've got to have a pipeline of projects in the works. You can't just have one, as I used to say in news, post it and pray that someone's going to buy it. It's a tough business. It's tough to develop this stuff and keep it going and in the pipeline. But as you know, Simon, you've reported on this, it just takes one. I get my first project up, and then all of a sudden that answers that third question. Who are you? What do you do? And then the third thing is, what have you done lately? Well, I've got this show on whatever, this network, and then you're off and running. Not for the faint of heart.
And if you want to be off and running with what goes on with Bob Sullivan's company, Bandit Productions, here's where you can go online, www.banditproductionsco.com. That's www.banditproductionsco.com. Bob Sullivan, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with your new venture. And as soon as you get your first show up, we'd love to have you back with your producer to talk about it and hopefully many, many more shows to come.
Simon, thank you. Really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. A pleasure, Bob. Take care and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bob Sullivan of Bandit Productions joining us live from the West Coast this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Let's take a break because we have some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're a big fan of fantasy taking place in different worlds, parallel Earths, here's one for you. It's called Oathbringer. It's by the popular author Brandon Sanderson, and you can get your copy of it right now, audio form, with a trial run with Audible.com. In case you haven't heard, Audible.com is not just a leading provider, it's the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, our very podcast affiliates. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised, and you get one free audiobook, a one-month trial of the service, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while it lasts, free health and wellness information can make a difference for you or someone you know. And get this, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one. One of those books can come from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio series, podcast programming as well. That's the Broadway off Broadway Regional Theater and great one woman and one man shows. So check out what Audible.com can do for you. Remember, it makes a great gift for you or someone you love as the holidays approach. For all details, audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up next, Fred Kaufman, executive producer of Nature, just started season 40 on your local public television station. He joins me here in New York after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, spreaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Joy Keyes Show tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. That's the Joy Keyes Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Where else? Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Eyes of October 2021. Simon Abbe, I'm with you live from New Haven, York, 70 degrees top of the hour. Question or comments for our next guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Over the 14 years and change this program has been on, we have been very fortunate to celebrate long runs of some of the most popular programs on public television through your local PBS station. Masterpiece, Great Performances, Sesame Street, Frontline, and others. We have another one for you. This past Wednesday, Nature, the long-running series on Wednesday nights, started its 40th season. And joining us live here in New York is the executive producer for 30 of those 40 seasons, Fred Kaufman. Fred, congratulations. Happy to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
What's it been like for you and your crew to document nature for so many years and so many decades?
Well, how much time do you have? You know, it's really an honor and a privilege, and I know that sounds cliche, but going out and spending as much time as we do filming nature, and by the way, it takes two and a half years to make one episode. It's a very long endeavor, but it's so worthwhile, and I just love how people react to the work we do. I'm never embarrassed to say what it is I do for a living, and I always get sort of a glowing review about wildlife documentaries and nature in particular.
And ever since nature has been on the air, there has been this incredible boom of natural history programming, wildlife programming, whether it's been the Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, other networks covering natural history in some manner, services now running on smart TV sets and smart devices. Is it surprising, or do you find it unique that with all that competition, with all this, you know, incredible programming out there, that nature still continues to find a great audience?
Well, ever since we started back in 1982, natural history and wildlife programming has always been popular. It's always gotten a good audience. In fact, when we went on the air in the fall of 1982, now this is before cable, obviously before streamers, the rating in one of the episodes was a 7 rating with a 10 share. Now, that's unheard of even with networks today. That was a very, very sizable rating. And because the series started off so well, it was never endangered of being canceled. And it's only grown in popularity. Now, there are a few things I think attributing to that. One is far more emphasis on the environment than ever before. People are more aware of climate change. They're more aware of endangered animals, extinction. This is now front page news. It's you see it all over. You hear people talking about it, so there's greater awareness of it. The other thing is, which I think has helped tremendously, is social media. The best and kind of most sort of astonishing visuals come from the natural world and become viral videos. So I've known this for many, many years. I mean, I've seen footage of animals doing things 30 years ago that was unbelievable. And today, that little 30-second clip goes on YouTube and Facebook, and tens of millions of people see it. So I think there's a greater awareness of that. And I think, you know, with Netflix and some of the streamers pouring in millions and millions of dollars in big series like Planet Earth, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. So, you know, more attention to the work we're doing, more sensitivity about the environment. And the audience today is so fractured all over the place that what might have seemed like a small rating a few years ago is now more of an average rating. And so people are just enjoying what we're doing. You know, there's also the last couple of years have been brutal. And natural history is sort of a comfort zone. It's kind of a safe space. It's non-political. You're not going to see murders. It's non-threatening. It's a place where people actually find comfort.
Nature was co-created and hosted in its early years by George Page. He was a former NBC News correspondent and anchor person. And some people here in New York might also remember him as the weekend anchor on the local news on NBC's station at 30 Rock, WNBC-TV. George always came across as a very erudite, high-minded in his tone, but he also seemed very down-to-earth. He was very relatable and in a very unique way in terms of being able to, in great language, describe what was around him, what he was covering, and so forth. How did George Page set the tone for Nature in those early years?
You know, it was when we were starting out, it was, let's get the show on the air. And George was actually working at WNET, which is the New York PBS station. And as you say, he came from NBC. So he was gifted with this beautiful voice. And rather than search around and audition, we said, let's put George's voice on the show. He's here. We can always count on him. He's easy to schedule. Let's just do that. And the very first year, Nature was actually hosted by a paleontologist named Donald Johanson, whose claim to fame was finding that Lucy skeleton in Africa. And so Donald Johanson was the very first host. George was the voice of Nature. After that first year, it was decided to put George as the host on camera as well as the voice. And people just loved listening to George. He came across very likable. He was very likable. He's from Georgia. So while you didn't pick up his southern accent, you know, off air, you could hear a little bit of it. He was extremely charming, fun, generous. He was just, he really connected well with people.
Nature is now in its 40th season on your local public television stations. Many PBS affiliates run the program Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Remember, check your local listings not only for the PBS station in your area, but where the program runs. Many PBS stations do run Nature at its time. It kicks off the Wednesday night lineup on public television. But other stations run it later in the day. Some run it later in the week. And others also do a second run rerun over the weekend. We're speaking with Fred Kaufman. He is the executive producer of Nature. And if you have a question or comment for him, he joins me here in New York. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Remember, coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have Sarah Gamble. She is the executive producer, co-creator, and showrunner of You. That's Netflix's popular stalker drama, originally starred on Lifetime 3 years ago. And it's just got a fourth season, by the way, that'll be happening next year. The third season is premiering today over most smart TV sets and smart devices. So Sarah will be our lead guest. And then you'll meet a very interesting entrepreneur, loves to act, write, produce, and direct. His name is Byron James, and he's working on not one, not two, but three scripted television series that he hopes to get on over the next year. Byron James, Sarah Gamble from You, they're both with us on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How does a Nature subject go from idea to actually being filmed over a two-and-a-half-year period, as you said, Fred?
Well, you know, we've been on the air for 40 years, okay, and so that includes hundreds of episodes. So at this stage of the game, we look at what's unique, what stories can we tell that we haven't, and so I can't do an elephant film with the assumption that nobody has seen elephant films before, so let's really give a tutorial about the animal. So it has to be somewhat different, somewhat more relevant and contemporary. So we might look for character studies. There might be a story about an orphaned elephant that was taken in by a group of researchers or handlers that they're nursing back to health and teaching to be a wild elephant. And during the course of the show, we chart that progress. And at the end of the show, we reunite that elephant calf with a wild herd. So instead of just doing the straight science biology of a particular topic, of a particular animal, we're looking for much more story and character-driven shows where these animals have particular personalities, and there are particular people who can comment on those personalities and watch them grow and develop, et cetera. The first new show of the season is called My Garden of 1,000 Bees. Now, this was an amazing story. The world's best wildlife macro cinematographers In other words, he specializes in shooting tiny things like ants and bees, insects. And because he was locked down in England and couldn't travel and couldn't film, he decided to take his one-of-a-kind cameras and lenses and shoot the bees in his garden. So this endeavor, which turned into an obsession, lasted a year. He filmed over 700 hours. Because the bees are in a different dimension, I mean, they move so quickly in and out, he would put five different cameras in his garden in different locations and just turn them on, because he couldn't turn on and off a camera with a bee. You know, you go crazy. And he came back with extraordinary footage, great dramas. Male bees, when they first come out of the ground, they're looking for a female to mate with. They don't even know what a female is. They end up jumping on flies. They end up jumping, you know, on something, on a flower. They end up jumping on a different species. So his revelatory cinematography really exposed the drama and suspense of what's going on in your garden, something you would never, ever see by yourself, and something you would never expect. So that's on Wednesday, October 20th. It's called My Garden of 1,000 Bees. And by the end of the film, he actually had a relationship with a particular bee. He named Nikki because she had a nick in her wing. And she recognized him and grew comfortable with him and did what she needed to do without sort of hiding from him. And so they connected. So, you know, where else can you see something like that?
How many original episodes of Nature do you and your team do every year, and where do the ideas come from? Do they come from independent filmmakers like that person about the bee, or do you find that there are viewers out there that will suggest possibilities for episodes, and you decide to jump on them?
Well, we do 13 new shows a year, and the answer to how we come up with ideas is basically all of the above. We certainly rely on filmmakers all over the world to come to us with observations they've made, maybe some footage they already started shooting, a particular story in a location we would never know about. So that's a large part of what we do. The Bee Film, for example, started that way. And then we have our own homegrown ideas. For example, a couple of years ago, we did a two-part series on horses and the evolution of the horse, the different locations where they live, the different breeds, et cetera. It did extremely well for us. So anytime a topic does extremely well, we think, okay, what's the next evolution of this subject matter? What else could we do? So after we did Equus, I thought, let's do something on American horses. I'm really interested in the breeds that are American breeds, like Mustang, Appaloosa, the quarter horse. Let's do a film on specific American breeds of horses and what they were bred to do and how, in fact, they allowed us to sort of develop this country and explore this country and expand the country. So it's a combination of us coming up with ideas we know will work, but at the same time, we need to hear from people in Africa and Australia and other parts of the world to hear what they have.
Duck Northwest Media, by the way, just joined our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard, Duck. If you have a question or a comment for Fred, give us a call, 646-652-906, or put your thoughts in the room. We do appreciate it. How has the art of capturing nature on film or tape evolved over these past 40 years? And I ask that because what makes this genre of programming so special and so difficult is that unlike other genres of programming, scripted or unscripted, A, you can't script it out in advance, and B, Mother and Father Nature don't take direction so well. It's like, you got to be there when we make whatever happens, happens.
Well, that's so true. It really is very unpredictable. And, you know, the reason it takes so long is because you're going for specific behaviors. You're going to watch courtship between males and females. You want to capture mating. You want to capture birth. You want to capture predation. Well, all these behaviors are pinned to specific times of the year. So most animals are mating, they might be mating in the spring. Well, if you have bad weather in the spring and you can't film it, which is not unusual, you can't ask them to do this in the summer and the fall for you. So you have to give yourself another year, another cycle of the seasons to come back and film that again. So the reason these films take so long, it's not that you're out in the field for so long. It's just there are moments, weeks at a time, when certain behaviors occur. And if you don't get it, you got to wait another year to get it. So that's why they take so long. Now, when I first started on nature, most of the wildlife documentaries were observational documentaries. They're pretty much what you think a wildlife documentary is. No people, you're observing animals, and the reason that was so popular is they sold all over the world. All you had to do was take out the English voice and put in a German narrator, or put in a Spanish narrator, or put in an Italian narrator. So it made selling these documentaries much easier by not having people in them. At some point, it just evolved to the point that we were seeing so many great people stories. And me personally, I was much more attracted to the emotional component of a person in one of these wildlife films, either caring for animals, studying animals, having some sort of goal with the animal that made it a real interesting story arc that we now started including a lot more animals, a lot more people in the films. But there's been this tremendous evolution because so many platforms now are broadcasting. I mean, we were sort of the only ones back in the 80s on PBS, along with National Geographic. But then you have Discovery and Animal Planet and the streamers, and everybody's looking for an angle to make what they have to offer different from somebody else. So everybody started experimenting, and there was this profusion of different approaches, different formats, different on-camera people, gave rise to, obviously, Steve Irwin and others. I think it made it much more interesting.
Mm-hmm. What about the equipment used to capture these subjects, whether it is smaller, less bulky cameras, whether it's high-definition television, whether it is 5G, whether it is GoPro? What do you think has been the biggest technical innovation to at least – when you're able to capture the subject, it makes the capturing much easier?
Well, back in the old days, we were shooting on 16-millimeter film. If you saw that now, you'd find it unwatchable. And 16-millimeter film came in 12-minute canisters. So, you had to be very judicious when it came to turning your camera on and off because you couldn't – you only had 12 minutes. And if you had to take that film can off, it took you a little bit to put the new one on. So now that you're filming with these video cards, you turn your camera on, and you just let it run. The great thing is you capture a lot more behavior. The downside to all of this is you have to log and identify all this footage, which could take to go through. So instead of being very careful in how you're filming, you're now just indiscriminately letting the camera run and then on the opposite side, spending a whole lot of time trying to figure out what you have. I remember in the old days, we were paying $400 an hour to book helicopter time for aerials. Very big deal to have a helicopter and go up and get those aerials. Well, today you have a drone. Easy peasy, nothing to it. I mean, that was a huge change. Cameras are lighter, much more variety of lenses. The resolution is so much better. Yes, you could shoot with GoPros now. We shoot with fixed cameras. We had a series on called Spy in the Wild. We made up these robotic animals with camera lenses in their eyes. And so it looks like you had a koala bear, but it was actually just, a robot. And we would look to see how the real koala bears would interact with this robot that had a lens in its eye, and we had somebody behind the scenes operating it, so it would blink and it would move its head and it would do all sorts of things. So the ambition has gotten much, much bigger, and the toys have gotten expensive but much more sensitive and more useful.
You're hearing Nature executive producer Fred Kaufman this half hour on Suave Televised live from New York, along with yours truly, Simon Applebaum. If you have a question or comment or many minutes with Fred, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Stay tuned before the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. The unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook could be yours if you've got the correct answer, so stay tuned for that. So what can we expect as season 40 progresses, Fred?
I just think it's much more interesting topics. I'm really excited about this season. I told you about the bee film. We have a film on the osprey that has taken years to film and complete. And all the behavior is up in Connecticut and not far from where people live. And again, it just shows that nature is happening. You know, it's out there somewhere, but also right under your nose. A two-part series on the Rockies. Again, many years in production. It looks at the iconic wildlife there, like bighorn sheep, cougar, sandhill cranes, grizzly bears, and it's called Born in the Rockies. It's like when you're born in the Rockies, what is it you have to go through to survive and be successful, and we tell that story. In January, Animals with Cameras, we talked about technological advancements. We were able to create these extremely lightweight cameras and attach them to animals and see where they go at night or during the day to places we can't access. And we've made some really interesting science discoveries about that. Animal, American Horses, I mentioned. I think it's a very exciting season for our 40th.
One final question. Before Nature came on, there was an incredible variety of syndicated shows about animals. There was Animal World, Untamed World. There was World of Survival hosted by John Forsythe, Wow Wow with Vance and Lauren Green and so forth. Have any celebrities or personalities approached Nature about doing passion projects, one-shot stories for the series,
you know,
over the years?
Years ago, we had a side series called In the Wild, and we actually had, you know, these A-list celebrities. Robin Williams did something with us on dolphins. Julia Roberts did orangutans. We had Whoopi Goldberg doing, she was at the San Diego Zoo. Deborah Winger went to China to explore pandas. Anthony Hopkins with lions. I mean, we reached out to these celebrities and said, if you could have an encounter in the wild with, you know, your favorite animal, which would it be and would you like to do it? And we got a great response. I mean, because when one of them does it and has a good time, they tell their friends, and then they want to do it. So we did something with Christopher Reeve, and he was good friends with Robin Williams, and he told Robin Williams about it, and we got Robin Williams. So that was all going along beautifully until 9/11. After 9/11, nobody wanted to fly anymore. Nobody wanted to get on a plane. And so it sort of went away. And so it's tough now to get these celebrities to commit, because we need to know 6 months in advance to make all the arrangements we need to make to get them on location. And, you know, 3 weeks before we're scheduled to shoot, if a big movie offer comes up, they're going to take the movie. So it's a hard thing to plan out with them. Yeah. But we do bring them in to narrate. We completed narrations with we did a couple of shows. This Rocky show I just mentioned, we narrated that with Uma Thurman. The Osprey film, we narrated that with Paul Giamatti. We've worked with F. Murray Abraham, Liam Neeson, a bunch of celebrities, and it's nice to have their voices on these shows.
Season 40 of Nature continues next week on your local PBS station. Many cases, it kicks off Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Remember to check your local listings not only for the PBS station in your area, but for when the program plays in your area. Many PBS stations do run it on that Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern or Pacific time. Others will play it later on Wednesday. Others play it later in the week or earlier in the week. And many others also do a double run, a second run of the show during the weekend. So check your local listings for all of that information. Or you can check pbs.org. That'll give you information about the stations, the time periods, and upcoming episodes of Nature. Now in season 40. Fred Kaufman, the executive producer, thank you and for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody at PBS and your production team for an outstanding four decades of great work, Emmy award-winning and other award-winning work. and hopefully many more seasons to come.
Simon, thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
A pleasure. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
Fred Kaufman, executive producer of Nature on PBS, joining me here in New York. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook. That's the cookbook inspired by a very popular movie of the 1990s. Here's the question we first posed on Monday. What person hosted the first and the last episodes of ABC's popular variety series of the 60s, The Hollywood Palace? First episode was in 1964. Last one was in 1970. Who hosted the first and last episodes of The Hollywood Palace on ABC? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so sooner rather than later. And all the very best. Before we leave you, if you came in late, in our news notes, we marked that today, October 15th, marks the 70th anniversary of the premiere of I Love Lucy on CBS. Well, if you're in the area of Jamestown, New York, where Lucy was born, there's a place called the National Comedy Theater that was erected several years ago in Lucille Ball's honor. And this weekend, they have a variety of activities starting tonight in memory of the celebration of the 70th anniversary of I Love Lucy's beginning. There's screenings of classic I Love Lucy episodes and other special events taking place throughout the weekend starting tonight. So again, if you're in the area of the National Comedy Theater in Jamestown, New York, check out the activity there. I think you'll be very well rewarded. Also, we will stay in touch on Twitter with any late developments on the IACI situation with TV producers over new contracts. And no matter what, we will have an update on Monday's program. And speaking of Monday, be sure to be with us when we have Sarah Gamble, the co-creator, executive producer, and showrunner of You, which began its third season today on Netflix. Plus, Brian James, TV series entrepreneur, actor, writer, producer, director. One of the series he's working on, which will premiere next month, is Bloodbath, at least on the web, maybe on a smart TV plumbing service. We'll find out from Brian on Monday. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast over the weekend. They're available 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, the iRadio Podcast Network, and other places as well. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going? Love to hear. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We do respond to what you have to say within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website maintenance provided by PodSite, the internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is Gintaras Bakus. Tomorrow we televised brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. And tomorrow we televise Simon Applebaum here in New York. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our guests today. Have a great weekend. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Remember, whatever you do today and this weekend, make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, go over your medical records, and then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.